My name is Carmela Khan Dorngru, and I am Dineh from the Navajo tribe. I'm a student at the U of A College of Public Health in the MPH program. Dr. Norma Gray is my boss with the program, but she's also my advisor through the College of Public Health. Today the title for the talk is Incorporating Traditional Native Foods into a Nutritional Food Curriculum for Family-Based Wellness Intervention for Urban American Indians. This scene is actually from my own home back in New Mexico, where my mother has a backyard garden, and we grow corn and a lot of other plants. And so this is the team, my name and the others who worked with us on the project, and they're all from the U of A, Tucson Indian Center, and the Native American community. We were funded by the NIH National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities. And so this is what the gatherings look like, basically. And I know you saw the video early on. It was seven gatherings, and we talked about a range of different topics, you know, healthy eating, stress, and physical activity, getting the family together, relationship building, and communication, and working as a community, strengthening the community. And in particular, the food topics that I covered were focused on nutritional value food, healthy food choices, using food and demonstrations, and we did a lot of games and hands-on activities, because in the end, that's what I realized, that's what the family enjoyed the most. So we really started centering the sessions around those kind of activities. And a lot on each session, the last day for each series, we shared a healthy dish. We asked families to use what they learned from the gatherings to share a healthy dish. Most times, people chose to bring traditional native food dishes, and that was really wonderful because it really brought together what we were trying to teach them and what they kind of knew from their own family, their own, you know, family recipes, and that was really fun. What I'm going to discuss today is about traditional native food and ingredients. The topics for the specific parts that we talked about focusing on traditional native food was this connection between food and a native way of life, and about local natural foods, especially foods that can be found in the Sonoran Desert, because that's Tucson, that's where the local, you know, vegetation is and how you grow there in a desert, and the benefits of those foods, the differences between organic, whole food, and processed food, and also we did the games and hands-on activities relating to that. So for the activities, we did a bead trading game where we did trade beads. So, you know, as native people, there's a lot of jewelry, and we also make clothing with beads. So beads was a really fun thing to do, where we asked families, like, different parts of the kind of like a quiz almost, but a fun quiz show almost, where we asked them different questions, and they would raise, like, a big flower, and we would hand them out beads for getting it right. And so it got the whole family involved, and we did meal planning, and also the whole thing about healthy recipes. We shared healthy recipes, but at the same time, we actually had a session where we asked each family, what's your favorite family recipe, you know, and if it was, like, chicken enchiladas, we all discussed ways to make it a healthy dish, and so that was really fun. We did container gardens and food demonstrations using traditional native food, and that's like a lot of what we have here, up here is what we really worked with, and it's so amazing because in Tucson, we have this organization called Native Seed Search, and they are just amazing. They are this organization, nonprofit, that have really taken an interest in traditional heirloom seeds, and they found a way to find them, like, from different people who grow them and continue, like, to save them. And they actually have farms out of Tucson that they grow foods and they bring them to the store and they sell them in the urban area. And we also have other, like, the tribes of Donna-Othum, they have a co-op farm where it's just, like, you know, maybe 10 miles outside of Tucson, where you can buy, like, corn and squash and melons that were all grown in traditional methods and from old seeds. And so we also did media presentations with Hopi corn, a story about the Hopi corn. It's an old documentary that was made on how to prepare Hopi corn traditionally. And since we couldn't go out to a reservation, we kind of brought the reservation to them and the desert to them through Felipe Molina, who was an elder in the Yaqui community, and he shared his knowledge about traditional foods you find in the desert, and that's where we based a lot of our own knowledge on. And we did story sharing, which is a way to open up, you know, communication and share. And so this model is what we really talked about during the session. We presented this model to people and we asked them, like, do you think food is related, you know, to a native way of life? And most people agreed. You know, we all came from different tribes. In Tucson, there's so many tribes in the area. And so we, you know, we related to ceremonies, songs, language, and stories. And when we presented, we brought in some of the language that people use, and we asked elders in the audience, like, how would you say corn in your language? And they really had a lot to share, the stories. And then we talked a little bit about ceremonies. And so specifically, the food we really worked with is mesquite and chia seeds and prickly pear. A lot of these have really healthy, you know, benefits for people. And because the program focused on preventing diabetes, we really stressed that these foods really help. Mesquite and chia seeds and the prickly pear, especially for the chia seeds and the prickly pear, they have this really sticky substance. Like when you open the pad or you put water, immerse the chia in the water, it becomes kind of sticky. And that actually helps regulate blood sugar. And so that's what we told them, and we actually tried recipes with them, and everyone really loved them. Like, we had some juice with the chia seeds. We baked foods with the mesquite, and mesquite also has the benefits of helping with blood sugar and regulating it. And for the tepary beans, that is a special food grown in the desert, because most people would agree that it is very challenging to grow food in the desert, but it's done, and people have done it for many generations. And those are specific Optum beans grown by the Don Optum, and it's a desert bean that's been adapted so that it can grow in very low water, and it grows with the monsoon. And that also has very good benefits for people who are diabetic. And then the choya buds and the acorns. Acorns aren't really, like, you know, in the desert, but it's kind of funny that in the U of A campus, we grow all kinds of trees now. And acorns, actually, you can see people going around harvesting acorns now on campus. So that was really fun to share with them. And the whole idea about organic and whole food, we explained what the differences were, but we really also asked people to talk. You know, we really wanted people to share with us what they thought. And some of the questions we asked them is, where does our food come from? You know, not so many people take the time to answer that. And also, can we sustain traditional ways of growing food, even in an urban environment? And a lot of people, when we talked to families, they were like, well, you know, I can't really grow in my backyard, or I live in an apartment complex, you know, it's not possible. And also, we asked people, like, do you know, like, benefits of organic food and whole food? And how did our ancestors grow food and think about food? We really asked those questions because, you know, we really wanted people to go back to understand history and how our ancestors thought of food. You know, they didn't really, I know my grandmother to this day does not agree with the whole way processed food is made, where you just make so much of it, it's available and it's cheap and it has really bad ingredients in there. And we told everyone, like, what is in your processed food? We talked about trans fat, we talked about like all the sugars, the different types of sugars. And so we really wanted them to start thinking about, like, is it possible to go back maybe to growing our own food, maybe finding other ways to access this food that a lot of people, you know, this knowledge is going away, so we need to find a way to bring it back. And so making the choice for traditional native food is not an easy one, especially if you live in a city. And so the main topic we really addressed was the knowledge part. Like, we shared our knowledge with the Seeds of Wellness participants. Like, I took it upon myself to learn, because I'm not originally from the desert. I'm from, you know, New Mexico, and we have very different food. We have a different way of growing. Our traditional growing methods are different. So I actually had to go out and ask people, read about it, go to Native Seeds Search, go to demonstrations, and kind of gather this knowledge to present to the people. And it was amazing how much it was so easy to access this knowledge. And even getting the food, I was able to get the food and, you know, and get people excited, because once they saw this, you know, grandma would be like, oh, mesquite, you know, we used to put that in our bread. And kind of bring back these memories, and they're like, wow, you know, it's available. And so, and even having them share their own stories and the food choices. So that's the action part. Like, we really wanted to bring the knowledge to show them how to get to it, and then the food choices, it's up to them to make the choice, but we really hope, you know, that they can make these decisions as a family. And even tasting it really, you know, encourage them to really want to make it on their own. And the main question we always talk about is, what is traditional food? You know, we have these generational gaps where in the past most people would be like, well, it's the food you just find outside, you know, the wild or what you grow, you're on your own. And so we always like, we talked about history. So that was the main focus about history. Like, how do we think about traditional food? And for the most part, you know, we go back on historical trauma and how we survived as a Native people. And especially our relationship as Native Americans with the US government and the whole incorporation of processed food into the Native diet, especially with forced removal, you know, relocation, people who had been in one location now moved to another, and they don't maybe know how to grow in that new environment, or they, you know, kind of had to leave behind all the knowledge they had. Their elders maybe passed away, and so we really wanted to bring this into the forefront and let people know that, you know, we did survive, we did have to, you know, make fried bread, the way of survival for most people. And the origin, we told the story of how for the Navajo, which is my tribe, in Fort Sumner, when the soldiers removed them from the Neta, they took them to Fort Sumner, and it was just a land where we could not grow anything, you know, nothing could grow. They tried to give us tools and the seeds to plant, but we were like, this isn't how you grow it, this isn't the right climate and whatever. And so we were about to starve, but that's when the government gave rations. And with the rations were the flour, the lard, you know, the basics to make bread. And it is out of creativity and need for survival that the women made the fried bread. So because of that, a lot of people today think fried bread is a traditional food. You see it in powwows, you see it in, you know, ceremonies. It's there, it's ever present, but it's not healthy. And so we try to bring that balance of telling people, like, what, did your great-great-grandmother make fried bread, you know? Did she even have, like, flour and lard? You know, like, trying to get them to think about how it has happened, why we kind of came to where we are now. And the Western thinking, we talk about the calories. There's, like, 700 to 800 calories, you know, a big old piece of fried bread. And also to acknowledge people for making it. You know, we survived because of this kind of food. But we also want people to know that, you know, there is a way we can go back to knowing what we really used to grow, what we used to make. And still, but if people don't want to give up fried bread, which I know a lot of people won't, we wanted to make a way so it could be healthy. So instead of using white flour, you know, we use sweet flour, make them smaller instead of huge portions. So that's what we're trying to emphasize, is you can still eat what you want, but in moderation, but try and make it as healthy as you can. So some of the results, just, you know, small sample of results that we found is when we did the pre and post and 3-month follow-up interviews, we asked people in the beginning, like, what is traditional food? Can you name, you know, a few of them? And people named a lot, and for the most part, when the pre-intervention, people, at least half the sample of adults said popovers, Indian tacos, and, you know, 42% said around beans for traditional food. And then the post and 3-month follow-up are very similar numbers. And it was about half of what the pre-intervention said. So, you know, after the intervention occurred, actually half of those who had originally said popovers now said popovers was a traditional food. I mean, it may have been because of all our discussion, or maybe they just chose not to put popover down as one of their foods. But I really thought that was really interesting, how in the beginning a lot of them, half of them said, and then at the end, you know, half of what who originally said that said that was a traditional food. And so what we learned from this is that, you know, we want to find these opportunities to sustain knowledge and to continue to promote action. Because even though the intervention is over, the community has still stayed together. Like, especially the key people who have started us, working with us since the beginning, our advisory board, especially the families who are in intervention, I'll see them now and then, and they'll be like, what's next? You know, what are we going to do? And so we got to keep this ball rolling. And even in an urban area, you know, we got to let more people know about how to access food, how to learn about the traditional food, because it's there and we can do it. And so what has happened now is we've actually created this community garden project. And with collaboration between the Seeds of Wellness Board, who were original members, who continue to work with us, we've created even more collaborative relationships with, like, Native Seed Surge, other, you know, campuses, the community campuses, and then local tribes we're working with. And we're going to do a cultural gardening intervention for youth. And this involves creating a curriculum that is based on wellness, traditional methods of gardening, and the benefits of traditional native food, and also working with the community on a bigger gardening project. Because this one with the youth is just a small one. We're going to test out the curriculum, see how, you know, what we need to change, do a pre and post test, and then. But with the community garden, we're actually working with the local tribe to kind of create a big gardening project for people and also use our curriculum with their youth too. So it's still, the ball's still rolling, and this is actually the community's iron horse, and we have our own beds on the right side, and my husband and I are taking care of the garden beds right now until the youth, we start the interventions, and it's working out really nice, believe it or not, in a desert. And it's really challenging, but it's a lot of fun. And we're using all traditional heirloom seeds that we're growing. So thank you for listening. And before we end, though, I would like to do the...
Actually, if you could hold on your giveaway, because we have 5 minutes, and I'd like to invite questions from the audience for all three of the projects presented, and then we can do the giveaway at the end of the session. So we have... Do you have any questions for George or Steve or the
UA
group? We do have questions.
Oh, yeah. My name is Gordon, and I'm actually from Phoenix, Arizona, and work a lot in community gardening, and definitely know the benefits across so many different areas as far as bringing the community together, nutrition, recipes, culture. There's so many amazing things, and environment. One of the things I was wondering about your project is how you measured the community cohesion, the increases in that.
Oh, there was actually a question of the pre and post interview where we actually did ask, like, you know, like, what community do you feel a part of, or do you feel like you want to, and like, kind of like, why, or what activities do you do with that community? Yeah, that's how we measured it.
Yes. But
and they used it in many different ways. Some wanted to put it on their over their eyes when their picture was taken. But it just became something they basically shared with each other. And part of it was to, you know, do that sharing in different ways.
And I wasn't sure about follow-up.
You know, we did a 3 month follow-up, and we also did a 6 month follow-up.
You mean the intervention follow-up?
See, there is not, and that was kind of one of the points, there are not the resources for intervention. We provide the name of their regional health corporation. You know, and that is all there is.
There has been, I've seen this from a few times before, and I know that Dr. Dan Dickerson, psychiatrist at UCLA's the last meeting, has introduced himself to Karen and offered his services for telemedicine from UCLA, but that infrastructure isn't built yet. But there is a possibility to try to bring his point was that breathing is a process, and this is the beginning of a healing process, and we need to ensure that the children have the supports that are required for healing through their life course in their home community. But then he also wanted to do something like telemedicine.
Yeah, Alaska has a very well developed home medicine system. But again, you mean it's the reality.
Yeah.
Do you not do anything? But in the times when they leave that day, they are given, you know, some things that they can do. And again, you know, but essentially they're not social workers or psychologists.
And that's the point that if you went to the opening session, Celine Cusco brought that point up. Do you do nothing? Or if you're in the Amazon and you can help one child, do you do that? And that's what her message is. And the society that you work with. So many things are now. Tiny issue right here, right now, before you go for it. I think that our time is up. It may be time to excuse people to go. It is, but we still have questions. If the speakers can stay, we'll entertain questions till we're kicked out.
Okay, we're going to do the drawing really quick. So just get out your little pieces of paper. Number 24? Oh, great. We get beans. These are blue speckled cabbage.
Thank you.
All right, let's see. Number 37. And if you go to the Native Research website, they actually have recipes on how you can prepare some of these foods. All right, number 32. Navajo tea. Yeah, exactly. And number 13. All right. You get parched corn, Santa Ana corn, and you just eat these. These are snacks. So they're parched. On your way home. All right, number 4. Oh, great. These are spicy pumpkin seeds, and these you can eat too.
Like spicy.
Let's see, like spicy food. And number 35. All right, these are chia seeds, and you can put like a tablespoon in a cup of water and let it sit for a little bit. And then it's very nutritious, and it helps people who used to run long distances. So they just add that to their water. So that's it. Thank you for coming. Bye.